Welcome to Uchi Okeke Legacy panel discussion called Living Legacies Generations Ahead. I am delighted to be the MC for this occasion. My name is Tamsin Lovell. I'm the founder and CEO of Artfundi. We work closely with the Uchi Okeke Legacy, and it's a great privilege to be invited to bring this group of esteemed individuals who both know Uchi Okeke well and have interacted and have relationships and experiences that they can bring to the table around the building up, the setting of the stage for the Uchi Okeke legacy. Building legacies, kind of preserving artistic legacies, is what we're going to be talking about today. And this is a significant and challenging exercise. And so we have brought together a number of great minds from different angles to join the conversation with myself and Selma Uchi Okeke towards unpacking this topic a little bit and also celebrating in remembrance Ijeoma Uchi Okeke, who was fundamental in the formation of the Uchi Okeke legacy, and who we all have fond and significant memories of. So I'd like us to bring her into the conversation, even though she's not physically with us today, and bring her in through our memories of working with her, because it was really a significant role that she played in bringing the Uchi Okeke legacy to where it is today. So on that note, I'd like to begin by welcoming Selma Uchi Okeke, who is the host of this occasion. Selma is an entrepreneur, a consultant, a collaborator by nature, and of course the CEO of Uchi Okeke Legacy, and the daughter of the great late Uchi Okeke and sister of Ijeoma Lauren Uchi Okeke. Selma, thank you so much for inviting me to be here and for bringing this panel and this occasion together, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Tamsin.
And then joining Selma and myself is Dr. Katharina Fink. Katharina is an academic, a specialist in art studies and African relations, a curator, a researcher, a writer, an editor, with a very deep knowledge of Uchi Okeke, also the co-founder and co-director of Ivalewa Books. And she worked closely with Ijeoma and Selma and other members of the family and the professional circle to publish Uchi Okeke Art in Development, A Nigerian Perspective. And so as a curator and cultural entrepreneur, she brings her expertise in curating and in exhibitions that challenge perceptions and showcase diverse narratives within the African art landscape to the table. I wanted to mention a couple of things that have been said about Katharina. She has been called a beacon at the intersection of academia and artistic expression, and instrumental in fostering cross-cultural dialogues. So Katharina, thank you for joining us today. It's a great privilege to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Wonderful. And joining Selma, Katharina, and me is Georgina Thompson, based in South Africa. Georgina is a luminary in the world of dance and performing arts, and she has dedicated her career to the development and promotion of cultural exchange through the stage. And with a wealth of experience as an executive producer of major art and dance festivals, international festivals. I think she's currently busy with some of those, so we'll talk to her about that. She's played a pivotal role in shaping the landscape of dance and live performance. And Georgina is also a legacy builder as the founder and director of the Dance Forum in South Africa, which produced a wonderful award-winning festival, the Dance Umbrella. And it is in that capacity that Georgina worked very closely for 5 years with Ijeoma, who served on her board of that organization. Something that I've picked up that has been said about Georgina is her commitment to fostering diversity and inclusivity in the arts has earned her accolades and admiration wide. Pleasure to have you with us, Georgina, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to the conversation. Thank you.
And joining Salma, Katerina, Georgina, and me is Oliver Nwanwu. Oliver is a curator, an art administrator, a writer, as well as a publisher and a renowned artist in his own right. He's a founder of the gallery Omenka Gallery based in Nigeria. He is also the son of Ben Nwanwu, a renowned master artist who knew Uche Okeke as a peer and as a friend. And Oliver runs the Ben Nwanwu Foundation, and in that capacity was a great advisor to Ijeoma and Salma Uche Okeke on their journey to setting up the Uche Okeke Legacy Foundation. Oliver's also the former national president of the Society of Nigerian Artists and at the forefront of promoting artistic expression and fostering a deeper understanding of African art globally. Things they've said about Oliver: they've called him a leading figure in the contemporary art scene and a renowned visionary artist and cultural advocate. Oliver, it's a great pleasure to have you with us. I think you're in the UK as we speak. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here. And I look forward to a very productive conversation. Thank you.
To start the conversation almost with the missing guest, our dearly beloved Ijeoma Uche Okeke. And Salma, perhaps you'd like to start our memories of Ijeoma in the context of building the Uche Okeke legacy, because she was incredibly passionate and dedicated to doing this work. And it is really her motivation that has been such an inspiration to all of us to keep going after she untimely passed away. So let's start by thinking about, in each of our cases, the way that Ijeoma touched our lives through that passion that she had about building legacies and her dedication to the arts and the work that she was doing in it.
Very passionate about anything that she picked up interest in. I was talking to you the other day, remember, Tamsin, and I was saying that in hindsight, I realized that she had so much, much love for my father's work. I didn't even quite realize it to that extent at that time. And you know, I also remember that both of us had promised our father that we were going to continue with his legacy when he was already sick. And I remember that both of us decided to consult with Oliver to, you know, to find out what how the journey had been so far for him, because we were going to do something similar. That was, you know, Ijeoma. She became the go-to person for the Uche Okeke brand, even before we started actively working, since she was the person that studied fine and applied art and built her career in the sector, we would always refer to her for any decision we wanted to take regarding the legacy. I just want to leave us with that ever-present optimism of Ijeoma's as we continue this conversation. Thank you.
Oliver, Salma referred to that decision that Ijeoma took to consult with you because you had been on that journey before. You have, of course, been running for a number of years, been running the Ben Nwanwu Foundation. You had a similar journey starting that foundation up. Having advised Ijeoma and Salma on setting up the Uche Okeke legacy, could you perhaps share some insight or a memorable moment from that journey, and also perhaps comment on the impact that you hope to see from their foundation?
Thank you very much, Tamsin. Some of the memories I have with Ijeoma, of course, Salman, their brother Uche, is having several meetings at the Benewong Foundation, which was residence, which I think adds to his historical and cultural significance. And we talked very lovingly about the man Uche Okeke and all he's done for the development of art in Nigeria. Of course, the Society of Nigerian Artists, which I headed for 11 years, I would say is one of the founding members. For me, I saw it more as a dual thrust, in the sense that while the foundation was being established to preserve its legacy, you know, I was also holding forth on the Society of Nigerian Artists. We talked about his paintings, we talked about how best, you know, to achieve a continuing legacy, especially, of course, knowing how things are in Nigeria and indeed Africa, where we're still grappling with basic amenities, epileptic power supply, how funding would occur. We talked about holding on to paintings and his artworks. We talked about putting them in such a way that you have an increased audience to not only view his works, but to understand his legacy, especially with the changing forms. You know, artists are indeed dynamic, you know, and how the younger generation of artists will be able to follow suit or even learn from his work. We also talked about some of the problems that, you know, encountered in African art today, including the fact that a lot of modern artists, you know, African artists have not been given their due, you know, in the Western canon of art history, especially when one recalls that modern art itself, you know, owes its very tenets, its very foundation to the geometric forms and shapes of African art. And of course, Uche Okeke was one of our champions in this regard, along with the likes of Ewong and the likes of the Zaire Art Society. They formed a new visual vocabulary for African art, for modern African art, which fused the best of Western techniques with our own indigenous aesthetics and traditions. And so these are some of the things that we talked about, how to get his works across to more audiences worldwide, and how for people to realize that modern art, you know, should give more due to such African masters like Uche Okeke. Thank you.
That's such a great piece of advice, or set of advice, Oliver. And of course, redressing that gap in the canon of art history is contributed to a great deal through important publications on artists, great African artists like your father was and like Uche Okeke was. Katharina, your great book, Uche Okeke, Art in Development, A Nigerian Perspective, was and is a very noteworthy collaboration as a publication. Could you perhaps share an insight or a story from that collaboration with the Uche Okeke family in kind of the role that that publication has in preserving Uche Okeke's legacy or contributing to it?
Yeah, thank you, Tamsin. I would love to do that. And thanks to everyone who spoke before me. It's very beautiful and important to hear what we have to share about Ijeoma. Actually, I'm sitting here in Joburg in a place where we often met, not far from, away from her old home in Johannesburg. And I have the book, like a physical copy of the book, with me. And when thinking about our conversation, I was looking up again what Ijeoma wrote when we were compiling the work and thinking about should it have another preface or I don't know, because it's a re-edition and it's a republication of a very important work that was not available in print or rarely available in print anymore, that existed mainly as a PDF in libraries and so on. I recall that it was in particular my partner Nadine Siegert, who was in first conversations with Ijeoma and the whole of the Uche Okeke family. But I remember strongly how we sat together and how we edited the preface. And if I may, I would love to read some words of Ijeoma. There's a line in that speaks to me a lot about what she meant for many, many people all over the world. I cite her with her written voice speaking to us now. So she says in the preface for the second edition, this publication to me represents the essence of Ute Okeke, his thought processes, the gestation of his ideas, his creative and intellectual journey, a manifesto. All this is symbolic for me in many ways. Reading through it, I am reminded of memories from my childhood, important landmarks in my father's professional life that I was fortunate to witness growing up. For instance, the exhibitions, theatricals, and travels to different parts of Nigeria, and the experiences and lessons learned. Ute Okeke, Ijoma writes, was a multifaceted, multi-talented man who was ahead of his time. A deeply intellectual and highly intelligent man, a visionary on many levels, who believed in the greater good and the power of community. And for me, these two last moments in what she's saying about her father and the legacy that he left also speak about the legacy, or give words to the legacy that Ijoma left for us to continue, I think, which is the devotion to something that is a greater good and the deep, deep value of community. So that art is not something that is for a chosen few, or that is for a market, or that is to be kept in one nation, one family, but that art is something that is a gift to humanity and that people should have access to. And in all of her operations in Johannesburg here, I could see that communal ethics of Ijoma so clearly, when she was always supporting smallest community initiatives like the Sophiatown Arts Festival, for example, always showing up, always supporting art-based initiatives across the city in lesser privileged areas than the one that she was actually staying in Northcliffe. So I don't know. Thanks for allowing me the space to read these lines and to hint to these two terms, like the greater good that art can lead us to, and the aspect and the respect for community. Thank you.
Just building on that, Tarina, for me, Ijoma was a light. It was as if she was infused with, and I can see where a lot of that came from, her upbringing with this great man who was an optimist, who was an intellectual, who was a collaborator by nature, and she was those things too. And it was as if she was filled up and overflowing. And I loved that she took that belief in the power of community and really lived it. And so she had a mission, because she'd made a promise to her father, she had a mission to work on and build up his legacy. But it didn't stop her from getting involved in other communities and other kinds of cultural exchange. I'm thinking of Georgina Ijoma working closely with you, serving on your board for the Dance Forum, helping you share experiences, build that project of yours. And that really reflected the collaborative spirit of her, but also of you. Would you share with us a little bit about the impact of the Dance Forum and the Dance Umbrella and the contribution of Ijoma on the board towards having that impact on the cultural landscape that was beyond just visual art, but into the dance arts as well?
Yes. As I say, I met Ijoma through Business and Arts South Africa. I started dance in about 2003, I think I registered. The Dance Umbrella was originally initiated by an organization called Vita Promotions in the late 80s. It was an organization that ran various platforms plus international collaborations and also local and national theater awards, et cetera, et cetera. And when Vita Promotions closed down, I took over the Dance Umbrella and registered Dance Forum. And through BARA, we were invited to present our organizations to people interested in BARSA who were interested in becoming part of boards for a nonprofit organization such as Dance Forum. And that's where I first met Ijoma. And I have to say, we connected immediately because I gave a little presentation. And contemporary dance, it's a difficult form of art to understand. And some people immediately get afraid when you say contemporary dance because they imagine all sorts of really weird things happening on stage, which is not entirely true. Contemporary dance is contemporary work, like in any other art form. And Ijoma had the bigger picture immediately when we discussed it. And I said, this is what we do, and so on. And she really became very important on the board by helping us to make other connections within Africa and also giving us advice, steering us in certain routes. I mean, the focus for me was definitely working with African contemporary dance. That was my big focus. So having Ijoma together with us was really a lovely gift, actually, because as I said, she had wonderful energy that would just come out of her the minute you started discussing things. It was wonderful directness and energy that you grabbed immediately, which helped you really look at a bigger picture, actually. That's how she often made me feel, that she led me into a space where I was looking at it in a much bigger way than what I was originally. And she stayed on the board until we had to close down in 2019 or 2020, because we couldn't access funding anymore, which is a big problem here. And after the 30th anniversary, we decided to call it a day. But Ijoma was with us there right until the last end. She was wonderful to work with. I really enjoyed her company, and she always came to the festival and watched work, which is a big bonus because many board members don't bother. But she was there with us all the way. She was wonderful.
I love that. You speak about one of the roles that she played with you was helping you build connections across the continent. And that word connections, Selma, I'm thinking of your the kind of connections that your family had to influential figures in the art landscape in Nigeria through people that used to visit your father, who used to seek him out for his wisdom. And I'd love you to speak a bit about how that influenced your approach to the foundation, to the Uchiokeke Legacy Foundation's initiatives today.
The connections are going with the blueprint of our father, going with what we knew of him growing up. The community was everything. He was collaborating almost the whole of his life. I mean, he had works he did on his own, but you know, the general philosophy, the ideas, the artistic direction, you know, was always involved with so many other people doing different aspects. And so we were brought up mixing with all kinds of people, all nationalities, and he made sure that we went to different parts of Nigeria to school, and he made sure that we went outside the country also to do some schooling, and it was just a natural given for somebody like Ijoma to be that community oriented. And in terms of the legacy, there was no other way to go but that, because it's his legacy to start with and we're building on it. And having the base of people that loved and respected him, because we've had an interview with Uncle Bruce Onabebea, and you know, they looked up to him, but at the same time he carried them along, and so there's this genuine respect. It's been a foundation for us for this. We haven't even really tapped into it as much as we should, but you know, we've always had that backdrop that we have the goodwill of the community, both in Nigeria and outside. And then Ijoma built on that and expanded that community for us. And so we were able to utilize her own community that she had also developed, going in the same direction as her father. And I think it was a natural process for her. Having the community makes a whole lot of difference. Having the ability to work with diverse people, being able to bring in as many ideas as possible, is the bedrock of our foundation. Thank you.
Oliver, I guess you must have a fairly similar experience from your father, Ben Nwanwu, who was, of course, a great connection of Uchiokeke himself, but he was also a similar man. So he also had this great network around him, and a kind of intellectual network around him. Those artistic philosophies, you probably heard them as well from Uchiokeke himself and from your father. How do you bring those? They're so inspiring. How do you kind of capture those and keep them alive in a legacy and in a foundation? Keep pulling those forward from your perspective.
Well, just like you mentioned, those were incredible legacies. These were men whose long careers spanned both pre-colonial, colonial, and post-colonial times. So they had very long and varied careers, and that, I think, is what they also share in common more than anything else. There was a time they were both struggling to be identified as African artists, and then they got to a time where they just wanted to be defined as artists. You know, in the, they went through racism, they went through colonial subjectivity, they went through fighting for independence through their art and defining Nigeria as a people, and, you know, also defining our aspirations, you know, away from our colonial masters. So their experiences were long and varied, and the question was how to bring all of this to bear in modern times, especially in the generation that haven't witnessed some of these things that and so we thought about the best possible ways to show their work, you know, through exhibitions. We thought about, first of all, even appraising what is on ground, because Nigerians and indeed Africans are notorious for not documenting things. And of artists who were incredibly busy both creating and at the same time in academia, it was very easy to leave pockets of evidence that curators and art historians would go by to be able to retrace their footpaths and the steps that they've made, you know, in defining their art and, of course, defining the aspirations of the Nigerian people. And so, you know, first of all, collating all these items, you know, from paintings to sketches, even sketches and their thoughts, little scribbles here and there, was always important. Also, other pieces of information, you know, locked away in old videos, you know, especially with digitization, that also became very important. So, you know, we had the problem of preserving their works, you know, which of course goes into exhibitions. We had the problem of preserving videos, reels, letters, any document at all. And all of these had to be digitized to ensure that we have more people researching into their life and their works and understanding their underlying philosophy. So all of these were very important. Then we had the relating to present times, and so inviting speakers that will study their work and also interpret their work to, you know, future generations, you know, present generations was also important. So we have also had to arrange talks. Then publishing, you know, was also another area we looked at, because you want to, first of all, document their pieces and to ensure that you have a good idea. We have a very young modern art history, especially when you compare with other clients of the world. And so it was also important not only to restore the pieces and make sure they're in good condition, but it was also important to develop catalog resonance, especially when you find the high speed of forgery, especially with rising prices for both artists' works. You know, it's very important to look into catalog resonance, publishing their work, you know, in their writings and their thinkings, you know, also important because we Africans, we believe a lot in oral histories, you know, and a lot of these have been lost over time. So these were the areas that we looked into. Even old photographs were very important, especially when we know that digitization, you know, at the time was a new phenomenon. And of course, Africa not being as technologically sounded as the West, you know, we had to partner a lot with some international counterparts to make sure that a lot of these were preserved. Africans coming into the office with the younger generation, everybody seems to have a mobile phone. How do we disseminate this information? So, of course, building a website, you know, getting on social media also became very important in preserving the legacies as well. So these were areas that we looked into: legacies, continuing education, preserving and restoring artworks, exhibiting, especially because of the sheer physical impossibility of viewing the works at the same time in the same space, loaning works to exhibitions worldwide, you know, is also part of our exhibition program, and making sure that we do something for the younger generation. And both artists were teachers, you know, professors, you know, and heads of their departments in the separate universities that they taught at. And so they played big on education, and they were both renowned academics. And so it was very important to think about how to, you know, shape the minds of younger artists that have, you know, either framed their practices against their own works, or, you know, have been influenced some way or the other. So it's very important for us to look at art competitions, to look at giving grants, giving some sort of sponsorship. I know the foundation, you know, establishes two scholarships at Ahmadu Bello University. So I think that these are also ways. And I think the Uche Okeke Foundation is doing well with the book that was just published. I know Katharina spoke earlier. So these were ways we looked into. And of course, continuing artist professional development. You know, how do we continue to train the minds, especially when we think that a lot of artists today, they learn a lot that is not in the outside world, that they haven't been quite prepared to in the four walls at university. So continuing artist professional development, just as Uche Okeke and Benny Wong would have done, you know, in their various mentoring, even at the association level, another thrust, another way to preserve the legacies. And these are some of the ways that we looked at. And of course, partnering with institutions that are not necessarily art-related was also very important, because someone mentioned earlier on the panel, it's not just about art for enjoyment or art for aesthetic purposes, but how relevant is art today to society, to shaping society positively? And that's one thing that artists have long, especially African artists, have long struggled to define, to show that relevance, you know, and how it's a major contributor to our economy. And so these are things that we looked at under the auspices of both foundations to see how, you know, we can show that indeed there are aspects of the artist's works that were not only important in defining our identity, but some of them also tackled such global issues that are very pertinent, like climate conditions, environmental sustainability, gender equality. These are some topics that resonated very deeply in both artists' works. And so, you know, even the talks that we organized today, you know, and some of the lectures that we organized and seminars we organized today, these are still thrust. Thank you.
Thanks, Oliver. You've mentioned a number of really important things there in respect of building legacies. You spoke about documenting, about that digitization, the importance of preserving all old photographs, all of those papers, writings, etc. I think that's something that, luckily for Selma and Gioma, was something that Uche Okeke was a collector, and he documented a lot himself. I suppose their challenge is the amount that they have to deal with, and kind of organizing it and bringing it together and sharing it. So you spoke about that aspect of building a website and finding a way to kind of connect with the audience of today and a wider global audience and a younger audience, exhibiting. And I'd like to ask Katharina about a particular exhibition, the exhibition that you worked on with Ijeoma. We will now go to Kapaza. Could you speak a bit about that, and what was the inspiration behind that exhibition, and how did it suit something that you're very passionate about in terms of diverse narratives within the African art landscape, and that was exhibited in Beirut.
Yes, I'd love to speak about that, because it was the last big project that we could realize together that gave birth to so many dreams and ideas and further thoughts that we will, which kind of form they will. The idea about the exhibition came together in a very beautiful and organic way, and I think also in a way that paid tribute to the way that Uche Okeke himself worked with his contemporaries. Spoke about that important words. So we were convinced we want to do an exhibition about the works of Uche Okeke in conversation with his contemporaries, based on the collections of Asele Institute and of a German institution I used to work for and I am still affiliated with, called Iwaliba House at the University of Bayreuth, a place, a museum that Uli Bayer and Georgina Bayer founded in the 1980s. Yeah, we sat together and we really gave ourselves time to think about what could be an interesting approach and how can we really do justice to the philosophies, the intellectual legacy, the aesthetic legacy of people such as Uche Okeke. And it was Nantuma Violet and Ijeoma Uche Okeke, like an amazing constellation of thinkers, feminist thinkers, I would say, that came up with the idea of really zooming into the term of Kaza in the work of Uche Okeke. really taken it serious. What does it mean in different moments of his work and his writing? And then coming up with the title that gives a direction, the look at the works, both in their time, but also in regard to what can they mean for the future. So we departed from lines in Ucho Okeke's writing where he said, "I will not go to Paza," and turned it into the negation of calling it, "We will now go to Paza." And politically, that meant a lot of things. It gave real emphasis on the collective, on the we, how I would say Nantume and Ijoma designed the show, which was really focusing on the interlinks between collections, interlinks between artworks, connections between different positions, in the new institutes, departments, and so on and so on. So really creating visibility for a network of thinkers and makers. So we decided for the we, for the plural, for we. And we said we will now go, because it's a new generation that looks at the works of the elders in a very respectful manner, but also trying to think it further. And I think this is the most respectful thing you can do to someone who has passed on, to take the work very seriously, to take care of it, curate it, preserve it in the way that they wanted it to be, but then also to take a little bit of freedom to think it further, like what could it mean for this time? For example, we did lots of workshops around Uli with young people. We had conversations with scholars of childism, talking about the figure of the childlike imagination in Ucho Okeke's work, profound things about the distinction between being childish and being childlike, very beautiful philosophical outline. And then also inviting a digital artist to get into the work, really get into the metadata of the work, into the structure, and create augmented reality works from the collection of Azele Institute and of Iwa Leverhaus. And we saw the response to the exhibition. First of all, lots of family members came, which made us very, very happy. But also we saw the response by young people in particular, the times when Ucho Okeke was traveling around the world and emphasizing on it's so important that we don't stop, that we keep moving. I'm fond of that one saying by Paul Klee, I think, "A line is a dot that goes for a walk." So that emphasis on not stopping and always staying in motion and always staying in mindful motion, that was something that impressed the audiences. And yeah, I think that the royal vision by Ijoma and by Nantume Violet, who I cannot name often enough, work with the work and create something that other people now can work with. And for me, that's of course to Azele Institute and to Salma's vision and politics for the future, like how this is taken up, how this will be thought through further, and what the ideas are regarding these topics. Regarding in the making of this exhibition, we've been a team of women working together. No? Salma was part of it, Lena Naumann, Nantume Violet, Ijoma Ucho Okeke, and myself. So that was kind of the core team with the two curators, Nantume and Ijoma. You get us talking, Tamsin. I'm sorry if that was too long, but you're taking me back.
It's so lovely, and I can hear the delight in your voice as you're recalling and remembering that experience of working on that beautiful exhibition, shaping it. And I think that kind of collaboration, it's so motivating, and it becomes bigger than all the individual parts that you put into it. And I loved the thought of keeping moving in a Salma. And I think I've loved that about working with Salma so far. Approach to things is to keep moving, keep going, and learn along the way. But that idea of keeping moving, and Salma, perhaps you can comment a little bit about, you have an enormous task ahead of you as we have this discussion. It becomes very apparent what a great task it is to build a living legacy that does both parts, the preserving, but also the promoting and remaining relevant and engaging that new generation. It's a massive task, and you have to just start and keep moving. Perhaps you could talk a bit about that process for you as you are engaged in moving on building the Uchiokeke legacy into the future.
That process, just moving. Well, we grew up seeing our father doing. I mean, he had an enormous task in front of him, putting his art philosophy out there. If he was daunted by it, we didn't see any of that because he just continued. So we were already very much prepared for that kind of, continuous and constant move. That kind of situation also, you find that you just need to, you can't wait until everything is perfect to get things done. So part of the whole process, you know, just like that, taking a walk with them, learning the ropes as you go, changing things along the way, much like using the Uli design. There's no movement that is lost. There's no single symbol that doesn't have a meaning. And so the whole process is as good as the destination itself. And every single day, we relive every single thing we need to do to keep the legacy alive. And we do it knowing that we can still improve on it, you know, even when it's as good as we imagine it could be, but we could still always improve on it. And so it makes room for the errors to be part of the process and part of the learning experience. And so we find that, and I'm sure this is exactly how our father found it, to be a journey of self-discovery, basically. You know, and that has been our approach all along. Nothing is cast in steel. Thank you.
That's a sense of progress and building, constantly building, constantly building. I'm thinking, Georgina, of you. I look at your CV and I think, wow, what an enormous success. You built this idea, the dance forum, the annual festival. And of course, I'm looking at it now and kind of, you've taken a 30-year journey on it. So I guess you've experienced a lot of that perpetual motion that builds something and builds something up. And now you are consulting other major festivals and dance festivals as a creative producer, executive producer, or consultant. Could you share a little bit from your perspective about that sense of building one step at a time?
Yes, it's definitely is one step at a time. I mean, when I was with Vita Promotions, we had the various projects that we managed, and then the company closed and I took over the dance umbrella and started the dance forum. In the 17 years I had a dance forum, I created a dance space in Johannesburg. So we're going to negotiate and discussing with the city council, and we finally got space. So that was an extension of what we were doing, in that we had a space where we could offer residencies and conversation and international collaborations, and even renting out space to assist us to get more funding. The festival itself originally started only being performed at the Wits Theatre. By the time I finished with the festival, we performed in the Wits Theatre in all three venues, the Dance Factory in Newtown, and various art museums and installation space places. The festival was literally all over Johannesburg by the time the festival finally ended. So really, it is a moment of creating partnerships and collaborations. I mean, I work very closely with the French Institute, for instance, who, when we had the 20th anniversary of the festival, hosted a dance film space, mostly dance, contemporary dance from France. But we had a space where people could come and watch contemporary dance, which they had never experienced before. And that, for me, was the most important thing about the dance umbrella, was create new things, to create new relationships and to offer artists as much as an open space to come and be the artist. That, for me, was the most important thing. And the development was the most exciting thing, to see how the artists did develop. And many of them ended up having international careers, because we had international programmers coming through eventually to watch the festival and then to invite work internationally. So, yes, it is a case of developing and connecting and creating partnerships, most importantly.
I'm fascinated by this thing in human nature. And Salma, you spoke about your father from your perspective, looking at him, you never got a sense that he was daunted by what he was doing, but the task he was sort of doing was enormous. And I get the same sense from you, and speaking to each of the speakers today, I'm like, the achievements, the dreams, the goals that you all have in what you're doing are so big and so ambitious and so daunting, actually, but none of you are daunted by them. You're just, I suppose, a factor of passion. Maybe it's quite peculiar to the arts or entrepreneurship, I don't know. But I love that it is that drive that allows you to just keep moving, to just keep building those building blocks. And I'd like to round off this wonderful panel discussion with each of you, perhaps giving your thoughts, what inspires you and what you think about in terms of building living legacies, which is what we're about. What inspires you? What advice perhaps would you give? As perhaps the most to keep that energy going and to keep in that perpetual motion.
Yes, we can start. Thank you, Tamsin. It's been a very interesting conversation. I've learned quite a lot, and I hope I've been able to make my own contribution felt. In terms of what inspires me, I think as an artist, it's extremely important to understand the responsibility of privilege. I always talk about this, that a living legacy. And so it's extremely important to realize the privilege that you have, being able to touch emotional chords, to influence people with your art. And even long after you have passed away, your works will remain as your ambassadors. And so your messages must be very clear, unambiguous. This must inspire people to change. It must impact positively on people. It must be able to chronicle history. It must be able to shape society. These are some of the privileges that all artistic people, I think, share. And so when you understand the importance of that, then you begin to think of a legacy. You know, how do you want to be remembered? What impact have you made to your generation? Have you been able to shape people's minds? And if you are lucky and privileged enough to be a teacher as well as a creator, I think that, the important question would be how and what are you impacting and putting into the minds of the generation or the successive generations after you? So these are all thoughts that artists share, and I think that, you know, gone are the days that it's gone art and aesthetics for enjoyment or, you know, for pleasure. But it's all about how relevant art is to tackling such engaging social issues, from identity to migration to gender equality to ideas of beauty to the gaze itself, and how powerful, you know, we Africans have been able to believe in ourselves today. So I think that the artists should also look into. And of course, there's also the importance of reading, because the more you educate yourself and you're open to other people's cultures, the better you're more able to coexist and live together peacefully and create a better world. So these are just my 2 cents for today. And I thank you for inviting me to speak on this panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver. It's been a pleasure to have your contribution to this discussion and your lovely radio voice. Georgina, would you like to add your what inspires you and your final thoughts?
Yes. Firstly, thank you very much for allowing me to be part of this conversation. I found it extremely interesting. Well, I'm still carrying on. You know, next year I'm working with Theatre Arts in Cape Town. I'm doing a young artists platform called Theatre in the Dark. As the word indicates, we're preparing for load shedding. So the artists have been challenged to create work that does not need lighting. That should be interesting. But I just want to say that I think a very important part for everyone with the idea of to let young artists understand what the legacy is, and to look at and at the same time work with you and understand the sense of possibilities in this creating the legacy. And that is what I find very interesting working with young artists, is making them see the bigger picture under that banner. Thank you very much again for letting me be here.
Hearing more from you about that challenge, we live in a continent of we know that those adversities perhaps increase our creativity because we have to be. So really, really interesting that you're working on this load shedding and just doing work without the normal stage lighting. Lovely. We'd love to hear final thoughts, your inspirations on this topic of building living legacies.
Thank you so much for also the two people who spoke before me. You gave me lots of ideas and lots of inspiration by just listening to them. Like the thing that I really take with from closer at the question of legacy, especially in the case of Ijoma and Utsu Okeke, three small big things. One is that we should continuously and repeatedly and always and on and that false respect for man-made borders, both in the political, the geographical, and the aesthetic sense. This is something that I learned from looking at Ijoma's life and looking at Utsu Okeke's life, that borders are not to be respected, but to be challenged. When we spoke, and especially when Oliver spoke about privilege, and I was reminded as every day on the words of a friend of mine that Ijoma unfortunately never met, because I know they would have had lots to share and lots to think about. His name is Peter Makarube. He passed on in 2015 already. He's one of the most important figures in the cultural sphere. I don't want to limit it to South Africa, but that's where he's been mostly active. It's a privilege to serve. And that's something I learned from Ijoma as well, that it's a privilege to serve artists, to serve communities, but also to serve your own ideas and to make space for them and to commit to them. And then the third thing that I think is so important in the work we do in this horrible political situation that the world is in, is to center joy, to embed the work that we're doing in joy. And that's something I can hear when I say that. And I know what it sounds like when Ijoma's like, when Ijoma likes. Salma knows that very well. And I think that component of joy, that we have the freedom to do the things that we want to do, this is joy in itself. And I think we should never forget that. That this is, it's important work, it's political work, it's often dry work. Making a book is also not always only joyful, but it should be embedded in joy. Because it's a big privilege to be able to do this. So thank you for that conversation. It was really beautiful to connect with all of you.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Katharina. It's been a real privilege. Salma, thank you as the host, the bringing together, the instigator of this beautiful conversation. I'd love for you to have the last word. So I'm going to just mention a few things that I've brought out of our panelists' final points that really struck me. That sense of privilege of being able to influence people and the impact that you're making in shaping society, in shaping your generation, and how important that is. Making sure that what the legacy is, that you're making it understood and helping young people and young artists in particular to understand what that legacy is. And I love the idea of imparting a sense of possibilities for themselves out of what you're enabling through exposing them to the legacy, and that deliberately challenging in every aspect, physical, psychological, emotional. Such a beautiful thought to that component of joy, because joy is so infectious and it's actually such an important part of life. And we should absolutely never forget to bring it into all the work that we do. And I'd like to give you, Salma, the closing word and to thank everybody.
I want to thank everybody again for making the extra effort to be here and for the important contributions you have all made. It has been a very pleasant afternoon speaking with everyone, and it still brings me all the way back to that element of joy. Joy that Ijoma had and lived all through her life. and how important it is, like several of us have said, to enjoy what you do. We saw it in our father. Because you enjoy what you do, nothing is too much. Like Katarina has said, it's not easy, but you know, you get by because ultimately you are enjoying the journey. And that is very important. I see a lot of people today, they do things without finding any particular joy or even interest in those things. There's a great difference when you find your interest points and you are able to leverage off them. Whatever else you need to do will come naturally. And in the process, you will find that you're actually breaking boundaries automatically, touching lives. It's just a given, you know, helping other people to discover themselves and discover what it is that really, really matters to them. I think this is the legacy we're working with. And I thank God for all of us that are able to do what we consider to be important in life. I thank God for being able to do this, because I can't imagine what else I would have been doing, really, myself. Helping to contribute to making my life count. And I think that is an important message we need to put out there for everybody, to live this life, you know, purposefully. Let it count afterwards. Thank you very much, everyone.